Welcome back to the Root Cause Medicine Podcast. I'm your host for today, Dr. Jessica Christie. Today, we're talking about one of the biggest conversations happening in women's health right now, the transition from PCOS to PMOS, polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome. And honestly, this feels like a really important moment because this isn't just a terminology update. It reflects a major shift in how medicine understands this condition. For years, patients have heard polycystic ovary syndrome and understandably assumed this was mainly about ovarian cysts or fertility. But clinicians working deeply in this space know the physiology is often much broader than that. We're talking about insulin signaling, androgen excess, inflammation, ovulatory dysfunction, nervous system regulation, cardiometabolic health, sleep, mood, fertility, all interconnected. And this condition is incredibly common. PMOS affects roughly 170 million women globally during their reproductive years alone. Yet many patients still go years without diagnosis or feel like no one has fully explained what's happening in their bodies. So today I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Camille Krause, to talk about why this name change matters, what PMOS actually is physiologically, and what practitioners need to understand moving forward. Camille, I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you so much. I am so happy we're talking about this because honestly, this feels like part of the new shift in women's medicine where we are finally evaluating women's health outside of their fertility or reproductive years, because this can affect them lifelong. I work in fertility. Of course, I love the fertility piece, but this affects people before, during, and after those years.
I completely agree, because so many women with PCOS have spent years feeling unseen by the terminology itself.
Exactly. And the language shapes care more than we realize. So the terminology itself was narrowing that condition down to the ovaries, and then clinicians may unintentionally narrow their evaluation there as well. And it could have led to just a gynecological referral when really we want an endocrinologist or other specializations involved. Or better yet, a functional medicine practitioner like what we do, where we're looking at all the pieces together. And patients may have also then delayed seeking care if they assumed that, you know, if it wasn't about ovarian cysts or they didn't have ovarian cysts or they weren't trying to conceive, then that condition didn't match them or fit for them. And we know that delayed diagnosis is common, and that up to 70% of people affected remain undiagnosed. And that's huge considering that we know about 170 million women worldwide are affected. And so many more are out there undiagnosed.
Yes, that is such a good point. Let's talk about why the experts felt the old terminology was so inaccurate, because I think this is where the physiology becomes really important.
Yeah, so the term polycystic ovarian syndrome implied that this was primarily an ovarian disease defined by cysts. But the cysts that we're talking about in PCOS aren't actually pathological ovarian cysts the way you think about a cyst. They're actually immature follicles, so just little baby follicles that didn't have a chance to be ovulated. And importantly, many people diagnosed with PCOS didn't even have polycystic ovaries on imaging. And so the terminology was kind of, it didn't capture the whole thing from the very beginning. And beyond that, it also, the name underrepresented the endocrine and metabolic complexity of the whole condition. So PMOS, that name now tells us that it is not just a reproductive disorder. It's a multi-system endocrine metabolic condition with reproductive manifestations. So we now can kind of hear from the name that more things are involved. We know insulin signaling is involved, androgen excess, neuroendocrine signaling, the inflammatory pathways, sleep and circadian rhythms, and cardiometabolic health all involved in this whole body physiology. And that's why we wanted to move away from PCOS.
I think many patients feel relieved, actually, when someone finally explains it this way, because suddenly their symptoms stop feeling so random. There's actually coherence to what they've been experiencing. So let's go deeper into the physiology, because I think this is where practitioners really benefit from a more systems-based understanding.
Yes, definitely. So at its core, PMOS involves interconnected dysfunction across a few different systems. And we understand or believe that about 80% of cases of PMOS are driven by insulin resistance. And so that's where we want to look first and see what's going on there a little more deeply. So what's happening is that hyperinsulinemia, high insulin in the bloodstream, can directly stimulate ovarian androgen production. And those high androgens at the level of the ovaries prevent ovulation. And that prevented ovulation and the high androgens, both of those then show some of those downstream symptoms that we associate with PMOS. It's really important to evaluate properly because it can take years for HbA1c or even fasting glucose to show abnormal values. And so if we test insulin directly or other methods of assessing insulin resistance, we're going to see that root cause a little bit sooner. So we want to be testing that for sure. But beyond just insulin, there are other things involved here. And so the relationships between our hormones are going to come back to making sure we're assessing stress physiology, cortisol rhythms, sleep and circadian disruptions, and then inflammation is our next biggest category with PMOS. And so we are starting to more and more realize and recognize how much chronic low-grade inflammatory signaling contributes to that metabolic dysfunction, fatigue, reproductive symptoms, skin changes, and cardiometabolic risk. I think it's a bit chicken and egg with the inflammation, the metabolic dysfunction. You know, they're kind of both aggravating each other, but we do need to look at both. And so when we talk about PMOS, we need to look at everything and not just a single organ.
One thing that I think is really important here is helping practitioners understand that polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome doesn't always look stereotypical.
Definitely. There are other patterns that we have to recognize in our offices. And so lean PMOS is probably the next biggest kind of physiology that you'll see where patients might sit at what we call a normal BMI, or they're not at a higher BMI. And that's part of what's going to be significantly under-recognized. I'm in the fertility space, so that's where we're often catching these things and testing more deeply. But the symptoms are going to affect patients long before or long after fertility concerns are an issue. And so, yes, some are going to present with irregular cycles or infertility, but we have to be on the lookout for other symptoms. So I'm going to share some symptoms of lean PMOS, but I will say that this list of symptoms is actually shared with other physiologies of PMOS. And so the symptoms present similarly. And so we're on the lookout for acne, hair growth on the face or neck, and hair thinning from the top of the head, blood sugar dysregulation, fatigue, mood symptoms like depression or anxiety, sleep disruptions, weight changes, dyslipidemia, fatty liver patterns, and chronic inflammatory symptoms. And because that presentation can vary so much, clinicians really have to be thinking more broadly.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're bringing all of that up. Can we talk about the diagnostic criteria for a minute? Because I think this is another area where clinicians sometimes oversimplify things.
You know, it's interesting. The current diagnostic criteria has not yet changed. It still kind of reflects the PCOS terminology. And I am curious if that will change in the years to come. So right now, the diagnostic criteria for PMOS is still defined by having a combination of ovulatory dysfunction or irregular cycles, clinical or biochemical hyperandrogenism, or polycystic ovarian morphology or elevated AMH in adults. And adolescents would only require those first two criteria rather than any ovarian imaging findings. So clinically, that definition does not capture the broader metabolic and endocrine context. And so to go beyond that diagnostic criteria, we do have to test more deeply. And so you and I would be looking at things like their fasting insulin, fasting glucose, lipid patterns, liver enzymes, testosterone. You know, there's four different types of testosterone that we can be testing, SHBG, serum hormone binding globulin, thyroid markers, waist circumference, their appetite signaling, sleep quality, inflammatory patterns. These are the things that you and I are looking at beyond just that diagnostic criteria.
Honestly, I think this is one of the biggest missed opportunities clinically. For example, you know, by the time glucose markers become overly abnormal, many patients have already been struggling physiologically for years.
Yeah, that early metabolic screening really does matter.
This feels like such an important opportunity for whole person medicine.
So some of our foundational lifestyle work is going to include making sure their blood sugar is stable, really drilling down into their protein and fiber intake, including resistance training and movement, really evaluating their sleep and circadian rhythm, nervous system regulation, stress physiology, inflammation across the board, and testing and treating nutrient sufficiency. And depending on the patient, treatment may also include targeted supplementation, medications, fertility treatment, or other metabolic interventions. So there's just so much that can be done at that root cause level. But the key is that we're not treating symptoms in isolation.
This framework is actually so much more compassionate too, because women with PMOS have often been reduced to body weight alone. And the reality is far more nuanced than that.
I think this terminology just does reflect more of what integrative practitioners have been doing for a long time of connecting these different systems. But this is now going to reflect back to the patients that they can be asking for help with all these different things outside of just their fertility. I think it's so deeply meaningful to patients to have to be able to understand that metabolic health beyond the number on the scale. I feel so deeply about that for my patients, that when they show up at a doctor's office with symptoms that, you know, they're hopefully one day no longer going to be told the solution is birth control or come back when you want to try for a baby. It's just so much deeper than that. And they're going to now be heard with their variety of symptoms and have somebody help connect those. And then also empower them to participate in working on those metabolic pieces. So, you know, I always like patients to understand you didn't cause your PMOS with your diet and lifestyle, but we can use diet and lifestyle to help manage the symptoms of PMOS with the help of, you know, modern medicine and other things. So I'm really hoping that this name change is just the beginning of how those experiences happen day to day in the doctor's office.
You are clearly so passionate about this. What's one thing you love about women's healthcare?
These patients are the most dedicated patients I have ever worked with. They so truly and genuinely care about their own health and then are active participants in the treatment plan. And you can't beat that as a practitioner to come to them with, you know, here are the different things that we can do together, and for them to kind of uptake that with gusto and want to work on that is just so exciting.
What led you to this field?
I worked in general health for a long time, saw a lot of different types of patients, but I did end up having a bit of my own fertility journey. And I I got to feel what it feels like on the patient side. And it was incredibly hard at the time as a practitioner working with fertility patients, going through fertility treatment. But it absolutely made me a better doctor, and I wouldn't change that for the world. And so I think just having been on both sides is actually incredible.
That's amazing. I have a really similar story. I started treating more so in the primary care world, and I didn't have fertility issues at the time, but my whole life had been told that I probably would have fertility issues based on symptoms, hormone imbalances, and things like that. And so I had to spend a lot of dedicated time putting a lot of pieces together because there weren't enough practitioners like us who helped put those pieces together for us. And I agree, going through that definitely makes you a better doctor.
Yeah, you know, you can't beat that, like having been on that patient side. And I think that's the story of a lot of integrative practitioners, is that we were just people trying to connect our own dots and figure things out, and realized like that's the way it should be done, and we can help other people as well.
A lot of patients come in and they are so used to the model of everything being so siloed. You know, if you step back and you put everything together and look more holistically, more in like a whole person lens, you can start to see patterns and see things that you wouldn't otherwise see if you're only looking in a siloed way.
I know. I mean, like half of my team, or there's 16 of us, and like half or more have some sort of story. And I think it does mean something to patients that we kind of get it on a deeper level.
Camille, you've been so generous with your time today. Please let everyone know more about your practice and where they can reach you.
So I work specifically in fertility. I'm in Waterloo, Ontario in Canada, and I actually work as a group of practitioners called Conceive Health, and we are integrated within fertility clinics across Ontario. So we do very specifically integrative fertility care with conventional medicine. If you're interested in fertility, please join me on Instagram. My handle is at Waterloo Fertility Naturopath.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me and having this conversation with me. And I'm excited for patients to hear this message.
Wow, I really loved that conversation. And I think it's just so cool that we're finally in a space where this name change has actually happened. Something we've been fighting for over 15 years in this space. My intention with this episode was that both practitioners and people with PMOS will leave feeling excited, hopeful, and really empowered. Episodes like this are why the Root Cause Medicine podcast exists. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with a colleague interested in women's health, endocrinology, fertility, or root cause medicine. We'll see you next time on the Root Cause Medicine podcast.
One important note. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of Fullscript or any affiliated organizations. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and it's not intended to be medical advice. For your safety, always check with your healthcare provider before making any changes to your healthcare routine. We'll catch you next time on the Root Cause Medicine podcast.